The shrinking Defense Department budget has the Pentagon looking for alternatives to fund its most expensive program. The F-35 Joint Strike Fighter program has faced years of delays and skyrocketing costs. Now the Pentagon has a new strategy to control the F-35's bottom line. It is asking the builders to put some skin in the game. Lieutenant General Christopher Bogdan is the F-35 program director, and he describes progress as slow but steady.
As you know, the program was re-baselined in 2010 and 2011 because we had managed to run it off the rails before that. And my predecessor, Admiral Vinlette, re-baselined the program. And since that point in time, we have basically stayed on schedule and on cost since that re-baseline in 2010. We're making good progress. Sometimes it's slower than I'd like. And that's just a matter of the program being so massive. We're doing so many things all at once in so many different places that in order to make steady progress and all the pieces of the program developing together so you don't get out of sync, sometimes you have to go a little bit slower than you'd like.
And just so we're clear on the figures, what is the cost of the program thus far?
Well, if you assume that we're going to buy over 3,000 airplanes, which we are, the cost that's been quoted quite often is around $380 billion for the U.S. buy of that 3,000 airplanes, which is about 2,443. So the price to buy the airplanes on the order of about, like I said, $390 billion for a little over 2,400 airplanes for the U.S. Today, we're buying airplanes for the U.S. Air Force for about $112 million a copy.
All right, so you have asked suppliers and some of the prime contractors to invest some of their money in cost reduction activities. What are some of the ways you think cost can be driven out of this plane, and how are they reacting to that request?
Right. So there's actually a two-pronged effort that we're trying to incorporate into the program. The first is we are trying to balance the financial risk of the program more evenly across the industry and the government. It was my personal assessment when I came on the program that the financial and cost risk on this program was mainly borne by the U.S. government, and we needed to change that. So to do that, what we did was we implemented some contracting actions and some agreements we made with industry such that the risk of future cost growth is more balanced. And what do I mean by that? Well, today when we negotiate the price of an F-35 with Lockheed Martin, whatever that price we negotiated, that's the price the U.S. government is going to pay. If it turns out that Lockheed can't build the airplane for that price and it costs more, any additional money needed to build that airplane is at Lockheed Martin's expense and their supplier's expense. So we've kind of capped the liability of the U.S. government going forward when it comes to buying airplanes. Additionally, because we're doing testing still while we're buying and producing airplanes, we have an arrangement with our industry partners that if we find something wrong with the airplanes during testing and we have to now go back and change what the airplane is in production and go out and retrofit the airplanes to be fixed, we share in the cost of doing that 50-50. So that's the one prong where we've tried to rebalance the cost and financial risk of the program with industry. The second is purely a matter of there are many things we can do to reduce the cost of building this airplane. But sometimes to make money, so to speak, you have to invest money. So we've asked industry, along with the government, to invest some of their money and some of our money in reducing the cost of producing the airplane. On their side of this, the good deal for them is if they appropriately invest the money and the cost of the airplane comes down, we will repay them that investment plus a small profit based on the savings that we made. So it's an incentive for them because they get their money back plus some profit. It's good for us because we don't have to pay them that money back or that profit unless we realize those true savings. And everybody in the end pays off because a lower priced airplane means it's more affordable for everybody and they can potentially sell more. And I can ensure that the services and our partners can afford what they want or need.
And if the plane is still in the testing phase at this intensively, how come there's 100 of them?
Well, because a long time ago, before I ever came on this program, we decided that it was prudent to start building airplanes before we got a lot of testing done. That's called concurrency. You have heard my senior leaders say that that decision back then probably wasn't the best decision for the program. What I will tell you is, I can't go back and change that decision. I just have to live with the implications of it, and it makes the program complicated because I'm building airplanes today that eventually may have to be fixed for things that I will find in the future.
We're speaking with Lieutenant General Christopher Bogdan, the program director of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter Program. And of the things that you are encouraging industry to do, to invest, and perhaps they can reap the reward if things are made more cost efficient, can you give us some examples of how that might flesh out?
Sure. So a very simple example of that is today when we build the canopy for the F-35, we build it using machines that are very manpower intensive. And so, one, the cost of doing that is higher because of the manpower. And two, the quality of the product and the variability of the product is subject to how good your workforce builds that canopy. With a small investment of money, we can turn that process into an automated process where the suppliers and Lockheed can now build the canopies using machines and modern automated production equipment. That reduces the cost overall, and two, the quality goes up. But to do that, someone has to invest that money. So what we've told Lockheed is, if you invest that money and build that new capability to build those canopies, and we see a cost savings in the future, we will take some of that cost savings and pay you back that investment plus some profit on your money. So we don't really end up spending any money until we see the reduction in cost, and Lockheed gets to invest in reducing the price, which is good for them, plus they get to return some of their investment.
Can some of these cost reductions also be in the area of the life cycle, the operations and maintenance, because uptime is one of the drivers of the life cycle cost and also of readiness? And so, yes, you can build them cheaper, but if you can build them better, can you get more life and use out of them? And in a situation where they're needed for combat, they would more of them would be available.
Absolutely, Tom. So the next step in our process for making this airplane affordable is not just to focus on how much it costs to build and buy an airplane, but in the future, how much it costs to maintain and operate the airplane. And that's the big numbers. When you're going to fly this airplane for 20, 30, 40 years, the real big savings comes when you can drive that operating and maintaining cost down. So what we've done with industry is we've stood up a number of programs. One of those is what we call a reliability and maintainability program. We've also stood up what we call a cost war room, where industry, the program office, and our partners and services get together and try and figure out ways that in the future we can drive this cost down by maybe redesigning a part, or maybe by changing a maintenance procedure, or maybe by changing the material on a part so it doesn't wear out so much. That also is an investment that industry is making and the U.S. government and our partners are making to drive that very large O&M cost down to make it more affordable. And that's ongoing right now.